Hello, I'm Brentero Yomne, and I'm a junior majoring in sports information and media at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And today, I'm lucky enough to be with current sports and news anchor Andrew Stocky. Andrew, please tell me, how are you doing tonight?
Brentero, I'm doing okay. So thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to talk to you and talk a little bit about what I do for a living.
That's awesome to hear. So for all of you listening, Andrew's just going to basically be talking to us about how the coverage of sports here in the Pittsburgh area has evolved throughout his time here. If you guys haven't known already, Ms. Andrew's been with WTAE since March 1995. Correct me if I'm wrong.
26 years, yes.
26
years. Hard to believe.
And so he's just going to tell us about how he thinks this coverage of Pittsburgh sports has evolved. So, my first question for you, Mr. Stocky, is just tell me, though, how'd you become a part of WTAE? How did you get the job in the first place?
Well, it's a ways back. I got into journalism actually after college. I worked in communications in various forms, marketing, sales, and had done some honor work in college, and kind of led me to my first job. I started in Hartford, Connecticut, where I grew up, by the way, in 1991, and I was there for about a year and a half. And I moved to Mobile, Alabama for another sports job for three years back in the early 90s. Before Channel 4 reached out to me, they'd seen my work and thought I might be a good part, a good fit with their sports team, the sports coverage team. And so I joined in 1995. And at the time, I was the new guy on the scene, the weekend sports anchor. Back then, we had Bill Hillgrove, who does the Pitt games and Steeler games, was still a member of our sports department, one of our lead members. And so I was kind of the low guy on the totem pole, and over the course of a few years, people retired, moved on, and I became the lead sports anchor and sports director in the late 90s. And, did sports exclusively until 2006 when I was asked to give the morning news a try. So I decided maybe I'd done enough with sports. The Steelers had just won Super Bowl 40, and it was time to branch out and do something different. And so I'm sorry I'm taking you through a career path, but maybe it might help here. I became a news anchor, and I did that exclusively for 5 years until they said, look, we miss having you in our sports department. We'd like you to be part of that again. So I have this dual role now, which is kind of, I guess, rare. There's very few people I know that have ever done this, where they're both a news anchor and a sportscaster. Sorry, somebody's in here. Doing a little bit of cleaning. I think everything's okay. No problem. Thank you. So since 2011, I've done both jobs here at Channel 4, and it's challenging, to say the very least.
Well, just it's awesome for you. Just the idea that they thought you would do a good job, and obviously, I think they obviously enjoy what the reporting and you've provided throughout 26 years, though, so it's awesome to see that you've lasted this long, and hopefully you can potentially end your career still in Pittsburgh no matter when you decide to give it up, so that's good. So now my first question to you involving just the coverage of sports throughout Pittsburgh since you got here. How would you say reporting, it can... Obviously, I want to talk about sports, though, but it can be just with everyday people, too. How would you say reporting is different back then compared to today? Is there any similarities, differences you've noticed?
Well, I mean, I think there are more people covering sports. I mean, at the time that I started, there were, it's hard to believe, 3 local TV stations, 2 newspapers, and I think WTAE Radio and KDK Radio. WTAE Radio doesn't even exist anymore. There were no bloggers. There were no, websites, there were no, podcasts, there were fewer media outlets. And in many ways, it was better because you got to really know the athletes. I mean, back then, we could go into locker rooms, we could go and not only talk to the athletes, not only interview them, but really build a rapport and a relationship, a working relationship, and sometimes actual, a friendship in some cases. It was a lot different back then. I mean, you learn things because the conversations were not guarded as they are now. I mean, players may not say things to the media now because there's just so much media, and sometimes things get taken and people run with it. There was probably a little more people confiding and sharing things in a way that they don't today. And also, players didn't have a way to reach fans the way they do now. I mean, most players can go to their Twitter page, their Instagram page, and talk directly to the fans. Back then, that didn't exist. At the same time, though, I think journalism in sports has changed in that it's much more in-depth. It used to be X's and O's. It used to be about just the game, maybe some contract talk. But it wasn't as intense as it is now, where you really – fans want to know about salary caps. They want to know about contract structures. They want to know about option years. The fan today is much smarter and knows more about the game, not just on the field and off. So that requires us as sports journalists to provide that information. So our jobs become that much harder. I mean, it's not just going to the game, sitting in the stands, watching the game, reporting on it, and that be it. It's a whole week's worth of activity in covering the team. It's the off season. I mean, the off season now is a much bigger deal than it ever was before. Also, I mean, let's say things like the draft, be it baseball, hockey, football, you need to really know what's going on beyond Pittsburgh, because you don't know who these teams are going to take, and you don't know who they're looking at, so you need to find that information. So I guess the takeaway is the job that at one time was, you know, pretty cut and dry. I mean, there was certain things you covered. There wasn't a lot of media. Now there's more media. It's more intense. And it's 24/7. That's the other thing, too. I mean, back when I started, we did the news at 5:30, 6, and 11 o'clock. And if you wanted to see pirate highlights, and you didn't know if ESPN was going to show them, you knew your local TV station would show those highlights. Or if you want pirate news or whatever. Now you can get pirate news at 3 in the morning because there are people who are following the team. So it's much more competitive, I think, is also a great way to say it.
That's really interesting to hear. And you're right. I've noticed this too. Athletes, they have their own social media accounts. If they feel like they want to say anything, they can literally just tweet it out or just send a picture through one of the social media platforms. But of course, athletes, they only want to tell people what they want to tell. They obviously don't want to tell people things that they don't want to tell others. So obviously, I think we can both agree that athletes now seem to have more social media compared to maybe the older athletes back then, though. So how would you tell me, how did you build any relationships with any athletes, though, in order them to feel more comfortable talking? Because obviously, maybe not just you, but maybe your fellow co-workers as well, they got to ask some of the questions that the athletes might not want to hear, but you kind of have to because your boss tells you to. So what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, we get to know the people we cover. And when you're covering a football team or a baseball team or a hockey team, you do build those relationships over time. And it's interesting because now a lot of those athletes obviously are retired, and I actually know them now in a much more sociable setting. But during that time, you build up mutual respect. They know what you're doing. You know what they're doing. If you basically go in there and build those relationships, those athletes will share with you things once they become comfortable with you, once they feel they can trust you, once they feel you're not going to be misquoted, whatever that means. I think, over time, you build those strong ties. It's hard now. I mean, I think, first of all, COVID has really changed everything. I mean, we don't go in locker rooms anymore. You know, we just don't. Everything is done at a podium. Everything is done from a distance. You're basically sitting there asking questions. And you don't get to be inside the locker room, which I think has a great benefit when you're a sports writer or sports journalist, because you get to really know the players in a casual atmosphere. You can walk up to whoever you want to talk to and have a conversation. You know, I remember last time I was in a locker room, writers will go to certain players they know and have little conversations, and then we'll have conversations with people that we know and turn those into interviews. But because of COVID, that doesn't really exist much anymore. You don't have that intimacy. You don't have that ability to talk to somebody maybe, off the record before you go on the record. So that's changed too, and that's a sad thing that we can't build those relationships the way we once did.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Maybe someday, when maybe this whole virus goes away, maybe it'll be back to normal or whatever. But it's great to see. It's great to hear that you have built relationships with these athletes over time. That's really good to hear. So now my next question for you. We kind of talked about this involving social media, but maybe sure. If you can, if you can describe to me a little bit about the technological equipment. So the question is, how would you say technology has made an impact on anchors like you reporting and covering sports, though?
Well, because things are immediate and things are reported and things are press releases go out, statements from athletes and maybe sports figures. You know, I get on Twitter quite a bit. You know, I think that's the place to go if you want the latest sports news or what's going on in the world of sports. I find it indispensable. I mean, I'm on the set from 4 to 6 o'clock for 2 hours. And thank goodness I have Twitter, because if things are going on, things break, I know. You know, I mean, I get an email about everything, but I do see stories, I do see posts and whatever. And I've, you know, been able to refer to that, use that, and be able to get the news on once I've confirmed it as soon as possible. So I think social media has made, I'm not going to say easier to do my job, but with the massive amounts of information out there, you know, and knowing what to follow, what not to follow, what to trust, what not to trust, it's helped me to do my job much better and give viewers an immediacy. I mean, I've literally seen stories break and there's something posted on social media and I'll, you know, try to find out if it's true, obviously, confirm it. Or maybe the team puts it out on social media. It doesn't sell a press release at quite the same time. And literally, I'll be sitting on the set. I will be writing that story during our newscast, building the graphics, putting it all together and say, okay, let's put this in and let's get on ASAP. And then I'll be tweeting about it as well. So I think social media has helped me, and it helped us with making breaking news immediate and getting on first, or at least getting on as soon as possible. The bad news is it's 24/7. It's all the time. I mean, I'm the person who basically, you know, I wake up in the morning and you know, this is my friend. Or I take that back. I'm sorry. Actually, these are my friends. Okay. This is my personal one, my business one. And I'm looking at both all the time. So virtually you are always connected. Which sometimes can be a bad thing. You know, you don't need to always be connected. But then again, with the job that we have, especially at certain times of the year, I mean, like during NFL free agency, you want to be tied into what's going on, whether it's the draft or something like that. I mean, you want to know as soon as you possibly can. So that's the two-sided coin of social media.
That's interesting to hear. So would you say because of social media that creating your stories that you're about to report on the air, do you think it's easier to create now compared to back then?
I think it's, is it easier? You know, I guess back in the day, you had time to really craft a story, and you still do at times, but sometimes when things happen immediately, you know, you don't want to wait till 11 o'clock. If it's 6 o'clock, you want to find a way to get it on. You know, if the Steelers tweet out, we're trading, you know, so-and-so player, you want to get on ASAP because you know viewers aren't going to wait till 11 o'clock. I mean, they may follow you on social media. Some viewers do, some viewers don't. But if you want to get on the broadcast, you know, having that access to social media or quotes from players. You know, if you're looking for, let's say if somebody gets traded, A, you want to get the reaction from, I don't know, let's say Ben Roethlisberger to a teammate being traded. You know, he may post it relatively quickly and you can get that on the air as his quote. This is what he said. That's, and also I think the thing is now, many athletes, many sports figures, actually many people in general, they make their statements on social media. They don't send out a press release. They don't always make themselves available for interviews. The statement is what's on social media. So being able to access that habit immediately, I think maybe in many ways makes the job actually a little bit easier now because you have complete access to a lot of different viewpoints from people that you want to hear from on certain stories.
That's really interesting to hear. I didn't really know much about that. Thank you for telling me about that. My next question for you, Andrew, is obviously I would assume that you've always liked sports. That's why you're doing what you're doing now. So what would you say is one of the coolest Pittsburgh sporting events that you have ever covered in a way that made you feel and think to yourself, like, now this is why I'm doing what I'm doing?
That's an easy one. The 2013 wildcard game at PNC Park. I tell people this day, that was the greatest sporting event I've ever witnessed in person. And I've been to Super Bowls. I've been to World Series games. I've been to college football national championship games, Stanley Cup finals. I've been to the NCAA tournament. Nothing compared to that night. That was the night that made me say, you know what? This is pretty cool. I mean, it was a night where 20 years of frustration, of losing came out, where nobody sat down. Everybody wore black. I mean, I've never been to a baseball game that was ever that kind of atmosphere. And it was a remarkable, remarkable night. It was emotional. It was, you know, that's the kind of night where you're a journalist, but you're a fan. You're a fan, you know. And you, of course you want the Pirates to win the game. I mean, it couldn't end any other way or else the story wouldn't work. And they did, thank goodness, in a very, and it was a dramatic game. And Cueto dropping the baseball, which is now legendary in this town. I mean, it was just, that's the event I think that really cemented, and I've been in Pittsburgh at that point 18 years and never even seen the Pirates sniff a playoff spot. It made me proud that this is my home, and it made me really happy that I do what I do.
Anything would you say that involving maybe interviewing the fans, the athletes, anything that stuck out during that event that...
It was just the whole night. I mean, you have to remember, they hadn't been in a playoff game since 1992. They had gone through multiple losing seasons. People think Pittsburgh is not a baseball town. And I always said that's not true. It's a dormant baseball town. You give this town a winning team, and people will show up. And that's what happened. People showed up in droves. And that was the culmination. You know, that was probably the high point, I think, of Pirate baseball since 1992. And it will never be. And here's the interesting thing. And this is just my feeling. You can tell me I'm wrong about this. Even if they win the World Series someday, it will never be like that night. Because that was one night where you hadn't experienced something for so long. And everybody who wanted to just say, look, I'm proud of baseball in Pittsburgh. I'm proud to be a Pirate fan. That was the night.
Wow. That was wow. I'm shocked you said that, but that's cool. So, I think, Andrew, that throughout all the sports that you've covered in this area for 26 years, though, I would say that it's probably fun reporting about these sports teams. I mean, the Pirates, though, even though there are times they don't make the playoffs, though, there's a lot of seasons in which, even though they don't make the playoffs, that they somehow are, like, in the hunt or, like, make the season look interesting. The Steelers always seem to do well. The Penguins haven't missed the playoffs since, like, the 2005-06 season. And then Pitt College football, it's getting better right now. They're always intact to play in a bowl game. Pitt basketball, Duquesne, Robert Morris. All those schools, though. Would you say that reporting in a town in which there's, like, a winning culture, do you think that helps your love for reporting or help, like, covering the sport compared to, like, maybe a town in which there's only one professional sports team or, like, a town in which all the professional sports teams are, like, bad?
Well, I don't even think it matters about the teams, how they do on the field. I really don't think that's the driving force of why Pittsburgh's a sports town. I mean, it's part of it. But, I mean, I love high school football as much as anything. That's one of my favorite things to do, high school football on a Friday night. And regardless of how the pro teams are doing, you go to a high school game on a Friday night, and it's a unique experience. I mean, it's something that brings a community together. I think it's something a community rallies around. It's a spectacle. It's an event. That's what makes this a great town, because every little community feels that passion for their teams. You know, and I think obviously we all feel it for the professional teams, but I think it's really truly shown in the local communities. I mean, I grew up in Connecticut, and I'm here to tell you, high school football was not a big deal. When I was a kid, I played on Saturdays. I played one night game in my entire life. So coming here and actually going to night games was a different experience entirely. And that's what I think makes Pittsburgh a really good sports town, because we support all our sports and we're passionate about them. You know, the pro teams are great, wonderful. It's fantastic. It's fun to have winning. But, you know, it's the fact that we're passionate about sports in general. And I think it all begins on the high school level and works its way up. And that's why you have so many great high school athletes in all sports from Western Pennsylvania. And, you know, the professional teams, yes, we want them to do well. You know, I want the Pirates to win. I want the Steelers to win. I want the Penguins to win. But, you know, if they don't, you know, it's okay, so be it, you know. But I want to continue to see the passion on the high school level and on the college level. That's what, to me, tells you what a really good sports town is. That it starts that low, that base, that ground, that grassroots, and it moves its way up.
Okay, that's interesting. I was really interested to hear what your perspective and viewpoint was about that, though. So, yeah. But, yeah, you're right, though. Like, besides Whipple football around here, there's a bunch of athletes when it comes to, like, wrestling, even softball, mm-hmm. baseball. They all go to, like, these major Division I schools, and I feel like that should be covered more often, though. Because, like, I go on social media and see these athletes, I'm like, wow, that's impressive. So, My next question for you is, Pittsburgh Sports Showdown used to be on WTAE. Do you think like a show like that can ever return to the platform of WTAE though? Because I've watched a lot of that growing up. Kind of disappointed that it stopped airing though. But obviously, I feel like if that show came back though, the sports media coverage would ever be back up though. So maybe I guess that question for you is, do you see something like that returning in the past, or why did it
You
all
know,
fall?
I had, yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was in news by then, so I don't know exactly what happened. I was part of the group that started the show, and I think we called it Action Sports Sunday, is what it's called. It's funny. I'm not a talk show person. I mean, I don't like. I couldn't imagine doing a radio talk show every day. I mean, I'm always amazed at watching Bob Pompey and Katie and Rich Walsh doing that CW show, 10:30, 11 o'clock. It's hard. It's basically, radio on television, basically taking callers, their phone calls and hearing what they have to say. And, it's tough. That's not journalism for me. That's a talk show. And I'm not good at doing a talk show, and I'll be the first to admit it. I think there's a place for it. I mean, it's funny. It's engaging sometimes to hear different personalities argue about sports or make their points, because I think it's fascinating to hear different viewpoints of something you've seen just that day. Would we ever do another show? Who knows? I know I've got enough irons in the fire. I got enough stuff going on that it's not like I need a show. I get my fun out of the fact we're carrying Steeler football on Monday nights. We do pregame shows and postgame shows, and we're going to be carrying Penguin hockey next year. I'm sure we'll do something along those lines for the ABC Saturday games. So that is my kind of outside of the daily sportscast enjoyment, more so than the talk show. But if I was asked to do it, I would do the best I could.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could give me a little whatchamacallit, just not a sneak peek though, but just any outside information that.
Hey, as soon as I know, you'll know. We end up doing it, I'll be the first to tell you.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. A couple other questions I have for you.
Sure.
When it comes to journalism, communication, mm-hmm. reporting, is there any new tactics that you can see being brought in or being used in the near future? Obviously, they're not created yet, but do you feel like there's any new developing ways that people can report or write in any way?
Well, I think one thing we've seen a lot of is the multimedia journalist, as you're aware of, the person who does everything, I don't like it because I think it takes away from you being really good at one thing. I mean, if you're a reporter, you need to report. To have to shoot and use your iPhone and stuff like that. I mean, I get it. It's fun to post on social media, but I don't want to tell a story just using an iPhone and being a one man band. I probably would not be doing this if that was the case, because I just don't think you could ever be a really good journalist and have to do everything else technically. I mean, there's a reason why photographers do what they do. There's a reason why reporters do what they do. But I can see more of that happening because the economies of what we do, because of the need to have more people covering more things. I can see the whole multimedia journalist thing, which has already taken off, continue to grow. Other than that, I mean, I've got to be honest. I mean, what we do has not changed a lot. It's still who, what, where, when, and why, and how. It's still asking questions. It's still getting attribution, and making sure you can be firm and be accurate with everything you report. I mean, there's a real, you probably notice this now when you watch news programs, part of their allure now, they say, hey, we tell you the truth. We're honest. We have the sources, but we back them up with factual information. There's a real, the journalism today, the biggest challenge is people not thinking that journalists are honest or have an agenda and being accurate. There's people think, that somehow, we're slanted one way or the other in the media. And there's some media sources that are. There's no surprise that if you watch CNN or Fox, they do have a slant. There's no question about it. Everybody knows that. Local news, we don't do that. Can't do that. Because we live in a city where basically we serve everybody. So we try to tell things up the middle. We try to, if a Democrat's commenting on something, a Republican, we need to find a Republican response. It's about being accurate, and it's about not having an agenda. That's the biggest challenge, I think, moving forward. Can we get viewers, can viewers trust us? And if we're doing the right things, they don't lump us all together as the media, because that's not who we are. It's not, the media is not one monolith. The media is many different groups, outlets, sections, and you know, at least where I work, you know, my job is to go out there and just share with you the facts every single night. And if I don't know something, I'm not going to report it. And that goes for sports too. You know, unless you're going to attribute it to somebody, a source that you trust, or another outlet, like a national outlet, like, you know, ESPN is reporting such and such, you know, and then if you can prove it yourself, report it. But I think the biggest challenge is, you know, having that trust from the viewer that they trust you to tell the truth and tell the story and tell it right and without bias.
Yeah, wow, that was interesting. Yeah, Andrew, a lot of my professors in my journalism classes, they obviously say how it's important to tell the truth, though. But and I feel like you said that, you know, you did say that too, and you just took it up a level. So I appreciate you telling.
Well, I think when we talk about, you know, journalism, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I'm a reporter. I rarely like to be called a journalist. It's just not, I don't know. I mean, journalism sounds like it's very, you know, lofty and you know, you achieve a goal, a degree or something. You're a journalist. I mean, I report. I see things. I tell you what happened. I try to add some context. Then we'll move on to the next story. That's what I do. You know, I tell stories. I mean, that's really, if I had a title, you know, that I was going to have, I'm a storyteller. Everything we do is about telling stories, because that's what news is. You know, the stories may not be always pleasant. They not always have happy endings, but they're stories. And that's why you watch the news, because you want somebody to tell you a story.
Yes, I would say that's a big reason why I watch news too. Just to hear like what types of stories all these anchors can tell me about what's going on and where I'm living. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my last question for you. You've been doing your job for 26 years now. What is one of the biggest things that you learned about yourself when it comes to reporting?
You know, I've learned that I, this might sound kind of odd. I mean, I don't let my personal feelings affect what I do. I mean, there are stories we do every day that are heartbreaking, just that tear at you. And the hardest thing is not to let the emotion overcome. I mean, yes, be empathetic, but don't let it overcome you. You know, there was a story today, and I'm not going to go into the details, but it was horrific. And I mean, I sat there and I could visualize it in my mind, which was even more horrific. And you have to report what's going on, and you have to be not stoic, but you need to be in control. But these things get to me. I'm the first to tell you. I mean, doing news is not that easy. It's not like, you know, when somebody is killed, it's you're saying somebody died today. You know, there's no way of just saying, oh, by the way, somebody died today. Every life is important, you know, and when you report on somebody being killed, especially in a horrible way or a way that, you know, they didn't pass because of old age. You know, they passed because of something bad that happened to them or this virus or whatever. It's tough. So I've learned that, you know, I've learned to be able to separate my feelings from the story, but it doesn't mean that I'm not impacted by it. And I think people, if I would tell people about something about the people who work here, we do feel for the people who suffer, who go through these things in life, or who lose family members. You know, it's a hard job to every day go on the air and talk about this, but that's what's going on in our community. So I've learned to separate my life from my work life, but it doesn't mean that my work life is not in the back of my mind when I go home at night or when I'm out doing something. So that's probably the biggest lesson I've learned, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Everything you said today, really interesting. I learned a lot about the way that a reporter thinks and like just simply what he or she might have to do to get the job done. So very interesting. Andrew,
I'll share if I can share one quick thing with you.
Yeah,
I don't want to waste your time. I know I've probably gone over my limit. That's what happens. You get me talking, look what happens. But you know, every journalist is different. Every reporter is different. You know, what I'm telling you is how I see the world. I'm sure you could ask everybody in my newsroom and they would give you different feelings and different responses. There are no absolutes. There is no one way to do this job. But the one thing we all do share who are journalists or reporters on any level, in any medium, is the fact that we really are passionate about what we do. This is not a job you can do if you're not passionate. I mean, you work nights, weekends, early mornings. You miss weddings, family events. You know, it's starting out, it's financially, it's not the most rewarding career in the world, but if you continue to work your way up, there will be some success, hopefully, down the road. You basically, the story dictates your life. I mean, I covered the Jerry Sandusky trial, the Penn State coach who was, you know, and the sexual abuse of young boys. I was in state college for 3 weeks. You know, basically just living there, covering the trial. You know, I went home on the weekends, but literally it's like I drive back, I drive up. That was my life. And that was in July, in the middle of the summer, where I'm sure we'd rather be doing something else. But your life tends to be driven by stories you cover, especially sports. I mean, if you want to do sports, get ready for your weekends to be taken up. Get ready for your holidays to be taken up. You know, if you're covering, you know, football, I mean, every Sunday, you're going to be busy doing something, you know. So it's a very difficult – and hockey season. I mean, there are not a whole lot of breaks in hockey. You know, and you're covering the team on a daily basis. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, it takes a certain kind of person. And I think as much – when you want to do it, I say go for it if you want to do it. But also think about, you know, there are going to be sacrifices along the way to do what you love. But I guess that's true with any occupation.
Wow. Yeah, thank you for saying what you had to say there. But, yeah, you're right. Even during hockey season, there's not that many breaks. And even though this season there's, like, a month in which the Penguins are off, you guys, even though I might think that you guys might have a break, there isn't, because we got the Olympics. The Olympics will go on in February, including the All-Star game too. So yeah.
Well, it's not even me. I mean, I'm thinking about like the beat writers. People are there every single day. I mean, I can't be everywhere every day. So, I mean, in many ways, the job I have is, you know, you're a jack of all trades and a master of none. I mean, you know, you're not at Steelers practice every day. You're not at Penguins practice. You're not physically there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, you go where you can go, but you know, you do find out what's going on. You do have crews and reporters and things like that. But you know, if you're a beat writer, you're following the team. It's like if you're a Steeler, think about it. The Steeler beat writers, their daily thing has been going on since July on a daily basis. You know, so you know, it just in hockey, it's even worse. So it's something to think about.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy night. You probably still have some preparation to do for the next newscast that you have to do.
I'm missing the Penguin. I could be at the Penguin game tonight, but I wanted to talk to you. I'm kidding. I actually do want to go to the Penguin game, but I'm like, you know what? I got enough paperwork to work on, and we got a Steeler pregame show in about a week and a half. I've got some stuff I need to work on, and I'm trying to watch the game as well. So this has actually been a nice break to be able to talk about you know, what I do, and hopefully maybe inspire some people to look into it, and if you already are looking into it, maybe get to that place where you say, you know, this is what I want.
Well, even if you didn't inspire others, you inspired me, and that's a win in my book.
And mine too as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Andrew. For everybody listening, thank you for listening to my interview with Andrew Stalky, just him talking about just his life and how he's evolved as a reporter throughout his time at WTAE. So, Andrew, once again, thank you for taking time out of your night. I really appreciate it. I mean, you have no idea how much it means to me, and I hope you have a great rest of your night.
Well, I hope you do the same in about 20 years when you are doing what I'm doing and some young person calls you and asks for 10 or 15 minutes of your time.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.